Welcome to Minute 97 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into the Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Jim Wilson of Blogging by Cinemalight website. Welcome back, Jim.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Minute 97 begins with Mac interrogating Haynes and goes all the way to Henley entering the room. Basically continue the scene from yesterday, where Mac is indicting a number of the prisoners in order to help them learn what they need to say and do while they during their escape, which is imminent. I mean, they never tell us the actual dates of everything going on. I mean, everyone's already dressed up. This is a dress rehearsal. You can call it that.
Yes.
Especially since Haynes is all dressed up, in a perfect looking German uniform.
Very nice looking at the close-up.
Yes.
Well done. Good tailors there in the compound.
Griffith really knows what he's doing.
Yes, he does.
The scene begins with Mac continuing to speak German to Haynes. And in the middle of their conversation, Mac turns to him and says, your German's pretty good. And Haynes responds, thanks, Mac. I put in a lot of, and then he stops himself. He realizes that he actually just got caught. Which, I mean, this is, for people who've seen this movie before, this is one of the most ironic scenes of the entire movie because of the fact that, that later on, this is what happens to Mac himself. You know, he's the one who's tripped up by someone speaking to him in English. I mean, I guess it would be something that's very difficult. I mean, I can speak from my own personal experience, you know, since I'm bilingual. So if I'm talking one language and then I'm reading something from the other language and then someone speaks to me, I might respond in the wrong language. You know, just because it's just something that happens automatically. You know, it isn't something that you're even conscious of, especially if you're, I mean, in these cases, none of them are fluent in German. They know, you know, key lines that they're supposed to say and what they're supposed to know. But in general, they have no clue what's going on. I mean, my assumption is that they've been in the camp, they've been in prison long enough that they've been able to pick up enough of it to understand what's going on. You never know how much each is fluent. I mean, the German that they all speak here, I don't know German, so I couldn't tell you what exactly they're saying.
I study German, but I can't.
I wonder if it's real German or it's just gibberish.
No, it's real German. I don't know exactly what they're saying here, but you know, it's just bureaucrat talk.
Give me your paper, you know, papers. You know, as you see in all movies dealing with Germans, give me your papers. Let me see your papers.
What is your business? You know, why are you here?
Where are you going? Where are you coming from?
How long are you going to be here?
Exactly. Why are you dressed like that? Why are you missing a gun in your holster? Simple questions that.
Do you always carry your helmet at your side?
Yeah. Where's your motorcycle? Shouldn't you be riding a motorcycle with that? You know, typical questions that one would ask. I mean, okay, so he asks him why he'd been C, which again, and his answer is Erich Stressel aus München. So I guess he's basically saying that he's on his way to Munich. Maybe Erich Stressel is the name of the street, or maybe that's sort of where he lives. I don't know. For someone who's not fluent in the language, it's a little more difficult to try and understand.
I can hear you going to Google Translate right now.
Of
I can
course.
Hear you typing it.
Oh. and
Munta,
you would be right.
I believe, is month.
Okay, the answer is, what's your name? He asks us, what's your name? So what's your name? My name is Erich Stressel, I guess from Munich. I guess that's the response that he gets. And then he starts asking more things. I'm not going to check all of it. You know, I'm not going to go and check all of the German here to ask what he's asking, to figure out what he's asking. But, basically, after Mac trips him up, Mac's line is great. He says, "Watch it, Haynes. It's the easiest way in the to trip up a suspect. To trip up a suspect, don't fall into that old gag."
Aha! Easy to you to say.
Exactly. And then he said, "Oh, I'm really sorry, Mac." And he says, "Okay, don't worry. But remember, German always."
German always.
It goes with the line. Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, precisely. He's you know, it's the difference between being on stage and the dress rehearsal. You know, you're not as on your feet, but on the other hand, you're under more pressure when you're doing it for real. So,
Correct. I mean, you know, you're walking around Germany, you don't want to get captured by anybody, and definitely filled with a lot of stress trying to figure out what you're supposed to do and where you're supposed to go. I mean, each of them, you know, you have the plan is for 250 different prisoners to break out. They're not going to all go together. They're going to each go, you know, their separate ways, and you know, you have to deal with stuff on your own here. That's not so simple.
No.
Especially again, we don't know the background of someone like Haynes, of you know, how often has he escaped or attempted to escape over the course of the time that he's been imprisoned. There, some of the prisoners were told how many times they escaped. You know, we know that Hiltz, for instance, did at least 17 escape attempts before he got to this camp. You know, what he did after that. So the next question that Mac asked, and so I had to look it up, says, "Why are you here?" That's the next question. You know, it's just to give us somewhat of
Or,
an impression as to what's going on here, what type of questions. Again, it's easy to see what they're trying to figure out here. You know, it's like we said, they're typical questions that one would ask a prisoner, or sorry, someone who's being suspected of something.
and everybody's looking at their papers, so you know, Germany, so it's extraordinarily restrictive, especially if you're a soldier.
Well, again, the biggest question is why would someone stop Haynes, who looks like a soldier? Like, why would he be considered suspicious? You know, except for the fact that he doesn't have a, you know, a gun in his holster. But besides that, like, which I'm assuming there is an answer for as to why he doesn't have it. I don't know what that answer would be. It's still, I don't know. Some of the other characters, I can understand why someone would ask them, would that they would be suspicious of them. But this is a really good uniform. The idea is to, okay, what are you trying to do here? So his answer basically, he actually gives a very interesting answer, which might even explain why he doesn't have a gun. He basically says he's been on vacation, because his mother's sick. Okay, now that makes more sense. So my mother was sick. I decided to leave my gun on the base because, you know, I don't need the gun when I go home. So I've been on. Okay, all right. That actually makes a little more sense.
There you go. Perfect.
Yeah, exactly. There's the response. Yeah, for those who haven't seen this movie before, so pay attention to what Mac says here, and you'll see later on what happens with that. Mac finishes interrogating Haynes, and once again, you see in the background our good friend Goff, who, you know, we've discussed. He walks in, and he's got this very strange look on his face as he's walking in to bring in his papers. I mean, he's, you know, he's wearing a beret, so I guess he's supposed to be a French countryman or something like that, you know. I mean, the story of the, first of all, the character of Goff and the actor, they're both very, very interesting. I mean, as you mentioned yesterday, Goff seems to be the biggest extra in the movie. You know, he's someone who, you
Yes.
know, he's the third American, he's the third wheel.
He's a
Exactly.
utility player,
But he's someone who has a
pinch
name. He
hitter.
has an identity. He's not one of the, you know, there are a lot of extras here that have nothing to do besides just walk around, mull around, you know, the whole time. But he's given some stuff to do, but he's usually a secondary player in all of the scenes that he's in. You know, he's the one who's always watching on the side. He's a spectator, I guess you can say. You're like, no, he's in the back.
And he's always the guy who throws Steve McQueen his
That's
mitt
right. Well,
in ball.
he's basically the
Goes
guy who
into
goes
the
through McQueen's bag every time to take out, you know, to see what goodies he can find in there, and then throw him his mitt. So that hopefully in 2 weeks, when he gets out from the
Yes.
cooler, he'll forget that I also stole something else from his bag. Now, I mean, he went on to have a very lucrative career as a director. He has 68 TV directing credits, which is quite interesting. Some of them are movies, some of them are TV shows. Yeah, and
Judd Taylor.
surprisingly, he actually directed the movie The Great Escape to The Untold Story. Yes,
Oh, you're
yes.
kidding.
So in
That's amazing.
1980, they have a sequel. Or it's not really even a sequel, it's sort of a remake of this movie where they actually try to show the real story as opposed to, you know, this movie is based on truth. Everything that they do here is pretty much Hollywood sized and fabricated, you know, to make it more entertaining. the made for TV movie, which is even longer than this one. This movie is 172 minutes. That one is 178 minutes. You know, they have an extra 6 minutes in that story. So Judd Taylor was one of the two directors, and that movie stars Christopher Reeve, Judd Hirsch, Tony Denison. I mean, I remember seeing it when it was on TV at the time, 30 some odd years ago. Something I probably should rewatch at some point, especially given the fact, you know, dealing with this movie minute by minute, I have to find the time to sit and watch a 3-hour movie that I'm not watching 1 minute at a time. It also stars Ian McShane, who plays Roger, and you have Donald Pleasance is the only actor to appear in both movies. He plays a different character. Yeah, he's still in it. I think he plays a German in that version. So people should try and take a look at that also if you want to get more of an idea of what the real story is as opposed to the Hollywoodized version of it. Anything else you want to say about this scene before we move on to the next scene?
No, let's move on to the next scene.
All right, so the next scene is a pivotal scene in the movie because we go back to Colin and dealing with his eyesight issues. So you see Colin standing in his room, and he's actually holding a sewing kit.
Yes.
Which I've until this time viewing it, I never even noticed that. You know, you never. I mean, there's the whole thing with the pin, which we'll discuss over the next few days, and I think next week we'll discuss it even more. He basically, you know, I never thought about the fact, where does he get the little pin? And you see that he's taking it out of the sewing kit that he has. So I guess he's not just a forger, he's also, you know, he's able to do any sewing repairs that people need.
Exactly.
Yeah. So he takes something out of the sewing kit and then just drops the sewing kit on the table, walks to the door, and then he begins counting out steps.
2, 3, 4.
He counts out 5 steps. 5 steps, there you go. And then he taps the wall with his foot. And then he goes down and picks up the pin that he dropped on the floor. And then he walks back, tries it again. You know, it's showing how much he really wants to finally get out of this place. I mean, we talked about it a few weeks ago, how he's there by accident. He went up for a joyride and got shot down. Not very smart. You know, he wants to get home also, just like everyone else. And he doesn't want to let the fact that currently he's having eye problems to cause him any more difficulty along the way. And it's nice to see how he's rehearsing this.
Yes. And what's interesting is he stops before he gets to the other wall so that he won't be found out by bending down and hitting his head on the windowsill in front of him.
That's right.
So he does it just enough, gives himself just enough space, just enough kick space to be able to bend down. And then he bends down and clears that windowsill and is able to pick up the pin, puts it back down. Now he's set. It's funny because we started this minute talking about a rehearsal scene. This is a rehearsal scene too.
Yeah.
No, he's trying to basically fool his fellow prisoners into thinking that he can see and everything is fine. Yeah. Everything is all normal.
Yeah. My assumption is that if this actually, if someone really was suffering from what he's suffering from, I think they would have banged their head in the wall. Maybe we just didn't see the times that he tried it and banged his head in the wall, and that's what made him realize that, okay, now I need to count 5 instead of 6.
Yes.
You know.
Maybe he's just an extraordinarily perceptive person.
We know that he's meticulous with details. You know, that goes with the trade of being, you know, being the forger. And at that point, he turns around and hears a noise and calls out to Roger because he thinks that Roger's came into the room. Now the question is, why does he think Roger's coming? Did he have like a meeting with Roger? You know, did Roger say, okay, I'm gonna come to your room a little later, so hang out there? Like, why would, if this is his room with Henley, why would he assume that Roger's the one who's going to show up? As opposed to him saying, Willie, Danny, you know, Sedgwick. He could have called it any name. Like, why would he assume that Roger was coming to see him?
I think there was a pre-set meeting with Roger. Roger will be coming in a few minutes later.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see him later in the week. But still, the idea is that you know, if you're waiting for somebody, then you'll be surprised if they you know, if it's not them. But if you're not waiting for somebody, you know, just randomly. So yeah, I guess you're right. They must have had the, you know, Roger must have said, okay, I'm gonna come to your room at 9 o'clock, and I want to talk to you about something. And maybe that's what got him concerned about the fact that, you know, that he actually needs to pretend that he can see. Because, you know, we just saw this yesterday in the minute, you know, not that long ago, which my assumption is it's either the same day or the day before.
Right.
You know, are people able to already see that he's blind? You know, has he, you know, what? If it's just a few minutes later, then there's no reason anyone would have even seen him unless they saw him stumbling across the barracks trying to find his room.
Well, time is tricky in this movie because in the minutes we're looking at, we're in that 2-month period where Steve McQueen is still in the cooler after his escape right after the July 4th debacle. So this could be anywhere in that 2-month time frame.
Right. I mean, I think that the movie establishes that the breakout was either in, I think it was the beginning of August. I think that's what it is, because they talked a few weeks ago, they talked about the dark of the moon, you know, where that's when McQueen was, that's when Hiltz was going to escape. And I think that they were waiting for the next dark of the moon in August for them to be able to get out. I mean, in real life, as we mentioned, I think it was yesterday, the real escape happened on March 17th, and that was one of the biggest problems because there was snow on the ground. You know, that I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of them got caught. You know, it's not difficult to follow footprints. No. Footprints in the snow.
Absolutely true.
You never know.
I remember reading about the many years ago. I read a book about the greatest escapes in military history, and this was one of them. And the movie is much, much more pleasant an ordeal than what the real one actually was. But still they managed to do the incredible things, while being under constant surveillance, and use many of the tricks that they employ in the movie, which is extraordinarily clever.
Yeah, I mean, I've been amazed at the amount. I mean, I reread the book recently. I've just always been I've been amazed while rewatching it this time, at how many of the different escape attempts that they show here were things that people really tried. You know, and you know, the book just goes into much more detail about things, but to be able to see the connection between them is great. I mean, I know that there are purists out there, obviously people who have direct connections to the real story, that are less pleased with the way that this movie was made. I wonder if they would actually find the sequel to be better because of the way that it supposedly gears more towards the real story. When I think the final week of this podcast, I actually have guests. I have 5 guests that are all connected to the real story.
Interesting.
I'll have to hear what they all are going to say about it. Yeah, that'll be interesting. All right, do you have anything else you want to say about this minute, Jim? Before we wrap it up for today? All right, very good.
We will leave Henley waiting at the door.
That's right. He'll be waiting for us. He'll be waiting for us tomorrow at the door. So, Jim, you want to tell anyone how they can get in touch with you?
Oh, they can always read my website, which is my blog, which is Blogging by Cinema Light. And just Google it. You can find it pretty quick.
All right, great. And while you're doing that, you can go to our Facebook group, The Cooler. You can send us a message by email, thegreatminute@gmail.com. Our Twitter handle is GreatEscapeMXM. And our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. So until tomorrow, tally-ho.
Tally-ho.